Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders had a big victory in West Virginia this week, and his campaign feels very good about next week's primaries in Oregon and Kentucky. Sanders made it very clear to his supporters on Tuesday night that he plans to stay in this race until the convention in July, and he believes he will be the Democratic presidential candidate.
And we are going to fight for every last vote in Oregon, Kentucky, California, the Dakotas. We have been fighting uphill from the first day of this campaign when people considered us a fringe candidacy.
Very few political observers predicted that the Sanders campaign would still be winning victories in the middle of May. They thought the campaign would be over by now. What is the future of the Sanders campaign? That's the topic of Vermont Edition today. And we start our coverage with Jeff Weaver, who is the campaign manager for the Bernie Sanders campaign. Jeff, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Bob. I was happy to be here.
And our listeners can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Is it reasonable to think that Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders can win a majority of elected delegates in the next month? If you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, do you think Sanders' decision to stay in the race through the entire primary season into mid-June is actually hurting your candidate? And in polls in West Virginia this week, 44% of Sanders supporters said they would vote for Donald Trump if Clinton is the Democratic nominee. What's the link between Sanders and Trump? Does that describe your position? Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Jeff, Senator Sanders says his narrow path to win the Democratic nomination hinges on his ability to win a majority of elected delegates. And if that happens, he hopes many of the non-elected superdelegates who currently support former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton will switch their support to him. But because the Democrats use proportional voting, in order for this to happen, Sanders would have to win most of the upcoming primaries with at least 65% of the vote. And the latest polls in California, a state that votes June 7th, show Sanders behind by roughly 15%. So isn't winning with 65% of the vote from this point out almost impossible?
Well, Bob, you've seen, I think, in a number of states out west, Bernie Sanders, in fact, has won with Washington State was 70%, Idaho was 70% or so, Utah, Alaska, he won with, I think, almost 80% of the vote. So he has done extremely well out west during this whole process, and so I don't think that that is an unreachable goal in California. And I also don't think that he actually has to surpass the secretary in pledged delegates or elected delegates. In order to make his case to superdelegates, I think he does have to substantially close the gap in terms of pledged delegates. And then we got to go to the convention. And, you know, a lot of these pledged or unpledged delegates, or superdelegates, as they're called, who are, you know, party officials and elected officials, you know, many of them announced their support for the secretary before the race was even started. And so what they're going to have to do is look at the state of the race at the end. If the senator, you know, Bernie comes in with a substantial momentum into the convention, if he has closed the gap in terms of elected delegates, they're going to have to look and see who is really the strongest candidate in the fall. And, the polling, both nationally and recently in battleground states, has been very, very consistent that Bernie Sanders is a much stronger general election candidate than Secretary Clinton. The recent polling they did, Quinnipiac did three polls in the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Ohio. The secretary was only beating Trump by 1 point in Pennsylvania and Florida, and was down by 4 points in Ohio. And Bernie Sanders was beating Trump in all those states by much bigger margins. And we've seen this, again, consistently, Wisconsin, similar, New Hampshire, similar. So if Democrats want to win in the fall, it's not to say that Hillary Clinton cannot beat Donald Trump, but Bernie Sanders just does much better and will be much better able to bring out the young people, the millions of young people who have come into the process to support his candidacy. He's much more popular with independents. We've seen that both in polling and in actual voting in states that have open primaries where independents can participate in the Democratic primary process. We've seen Bernie Sanders winning 65 or 70% of independents. And those are both key groups in the fall. And so that's one of the reasons why he's a much stronger candidate than the secretary. So that's, I think, what the burden on the superdelegates is going to be, to look at those, the two candidates, and to make a decision about who will best be able to retain the White House and help Democrats win in the Congress.
So, Jeff, for the last couple of weeks, the campaign has been talking about the need to win a majority of elected delegates. That's the big argument to the superdelegates. Are you saying now, well, we just need to come close?
Well, no. I mean, obviously, if you have a majority of pledged delegates, elected delegates, that puts you in a much stronger position to make the argument. There's no doubt about that. But we have said pretty consistently that if the senator can finish the race very strong, a lot of momentum. You know, we saw in West Virginia, a state that Hillary Clinton won against Barack Obama by 41 points back in 2008. She lost by 15 points this time to Bernie Sanders. The week before, he had a surprise upset in Indiana, where he was projected to lose and, in fact, won. So if he can finish the race strong, like I said, with a lot of momentum, and close the delegate gap, then I think, he will be in a strong position to make the case to the superdelegates that they should take another look, particularly two categories of superdelegates. First of all, there's about 150 superdelegates who are so far uncommitted. So that's obviously a group of superdelegates that we are reaching out to. In addition to that, there are superdelegates in states where he won overwhelmingly, and yet they have stayed with the secretary. And then the third category is, as I mentioned before, a large number of superdelegates who announced their support for the secretary before the race was even engaged. And so, those three groups, I think, would form the core of superdelegates who we would reach out to, and the Senate, Senator would make the case to that he's a much stronger candidate.
Jeff, would it be fair to say, in order to make that argument, you have to win California?
Well, winning California is, I think, a critical piece of this, Bob. Absolutely.
And, it seemed like for a lot of the campaign, Jeff, the Sanders campaign downplayed the importance of these super delegates, the non-elected delegates, state officials, et cetera. Now it seems like they're a central part of your campaign strategy.
Well, the reason for that is, look, Bernie Sanders has taken his campaign across the country. He's gone from 3% in the polls to, winning now 19 states and Democrats plus Democrats abroad. He's on track to win many more states. And, the core of this process is and should be the voters, right, who pick the elected delegates. No doubt about that. But the way the system is set up, when we get to the end of the process, neither Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton will have enough elected or pledged delegates, or called pledged delegates, going in the convention to win. And so the superdelegates are going to pick the winner of this race, regardless of whether it's Secretary Clinton or Bernie Sanders. And so, that's where the focus is now. And they don't vote, actually. I mean, they may announce an allegiance earlier, but they don't really vote until you get to the convention, whereas, the pledged delegates are being chosen throughout the process as we go state to state. The superdelegates do not actually vote until we get to Philadelphia.
Jeff, it seems like your campaign is very frustrated with the leadership of the Democratic Party, especially over the selection of people to the standing committees at the National Convention in Philadelphia this summer. In fact, Senator Sanders wrote a letter recently accusing the DNC of stacking the deck against him. He wrote, quote, "We are prepared to mobilize our delegates to force as many votes as necessary to amend the platform and rules of the convention." What does that mean, and is the DNC treating the Sanders campaign unfairly?
Well, I think we've seen, any sort of objective observer looking at this process throughout would see that the DNC certainly has had their finger on the scale in terms of helping Secretary Clinton. I don't think there's any doubt about that. In terms of, you'll remember the debate about debates, right? How many debates there would be. There was very few debates scheduled at the beginning. They were often scheduled on weekends or, around holidays or other events that would, limit the viewership of these debates. That was obviously a bone of contention. Bernie Sanders has since been able to increase the number of debates. and there should be another, actually another debate coming up fairly soon in California. The Clinton campaign agreed to that during the New Hampshire primary. So hopefully they'll keep their word on that, and we can have that that debate in California coming up. So you had that incident. You may remember the whole flap about where they shut off the campaign's access to its own data, and we had to go to federal court to get that resolved. So there's been instance after instance of, and then there's these joint fundraising agreements. I don't want to get too far in the weeds with it, but, you know, these are agreements that were set up, which essentially benefit Hillary Clinton's fundraising in a way that she would not be able to do under federal law without the complicity of the party, the national party. So, you know, you've seen instance after instance of where the national party has sort of put its finger on the scale for Hillary Clinton and against Bernie Sanders. And now this latest occurrence with these what are called the standing committees of the Democratic Party, the chair has the ability to pick a certain number of the 25 of the members of each of the committees. Campaigns were asked to provide a list of people they wanted to have put on the committees. We submitted a list of 45 people, and of those people, the chairwoman picked three out of Bernie's people and a whole slew of the people who support Hillary Clinton, and in fact installed chairs on two of the committees, the Rules Committee and the Platform Committee, who are not only are pro-Hillary Clinton, but have been actively campaigning and at times extremely hostile to Bernie Sanders. So this is just another example of where the sort of institutional, you know, the national party has is putting his finger on the scale. But the truth of the matter is we're going to go to the convention, and Bernie Sanders is going to have, you know, close to 2,000, if not more, delegates there on the floor of the convention. And if, you know, he is not treated, and his supporters and millions of people who have supported him across the country are not treated fairly in terms of either the rules or the platform, he's prepared to take those votes to the floor and force votes on them. So, you know, maybe we'll have a 4-day convention. We'll turn it into a 2-week convention. I think that'll give him a lot of leverage to get some positive things done.
Today on the program, we're looking at the future of the Sanders campaign. With us right now is campaign manager Jeff Weaver. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to our callers and talk to Tina in Colchester. Hi, Tina. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I wanted to ask if by any chance that Hillary's negative ratings are quite high and she doesn't stand too much of a chance of winning against Donald Trump, which I don't think she does. Is it possible that the paid delegates, even though the dollar signs are there and they're paid for this, would they turn around and say, well, we can't lose this election, we'll get Bernie to be our candidate?
Well, that's really what I was talking about in terms of these superdelegates who are elected officials, members of Congress and governors and high-ranking party officials, the state chairs. But, you know, that's really the case that's going to be made to them. I mean, in these polls I mentioned, these battleground polls I mentioned earlier, the Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida polls, in fact, Hillary Clinton had higher net negatives than did Donald Trump, which was, I think, pretty surprising to a lot of people. And that's, you know, that's part of the case is, you know, these are elected officials. They want the party to win. They want other Democrats elected. Obviously, they want to retain this. They want to take the Senate back over, and they'd like to take over the House, and they want to retain the White House. And so that's really the crux of the argument to these superdelegates is that if you want to win, you should go with the candidate that's strongest, and that's Bernie Sanders.
Let's turn to Naomi, who is calling from Moncton. Hi, Naomi. Welcome to the program.
Hi. It seems to me there's a lot of hypocrisy in this process. Certainly the superdelegates, I don't think, should be there at all. But one of the questions I have is, what happens if Hillary Clinton does get indicted based on the emails? I hope this is a rumor, but I've heard that the party is planning on choosing Joe Biden. And if that's true, he will have won absolutely no states, have no delegates, and Bernie will be there with a plurality of delegates and states, which just seems completely hypocritical to me.
Well, I have not heard that rumor. We have, and Bernie has, sort of stayed out of that whole discussion about emails and what have you, and just leaving the legal process to play itself out. So he has not really sort of gotten involved in that. I have not heard those rumors.
Jeff, let me ask you about some of the polling information from West Virginia on Tuesday night. It found that 44% of the people supporting Bernie Sanders would vote for Donald Trump in the general election if Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee. 44%, that's a pretty large number. And the same situation seems to exist in a number of Midwestern states that have lost a good deal of their manufacturing base. Are you concerned about this situation, and are you doing anything to address it?
Well, certainly if Secretary Clinton becomes the nominee, I think everybody is going to work as hard as possible to make sure Donald Trump is not president of the United States. I think that goes without saying. Now, that there's going to be a tremendous amount of burden on the secretary to reach out to the millions of people who, have indicated during the course of these primaries and caucuses that they want fundamental change in this country, that they want to end a rigged economy, they want to deal with a corrupt campaign finance system. And she's going to have to convince these people that she, in fact, is going to be able to deal with these issues. So it is a big problem. And the same is true for independent voters, right? Independent voters who have voted overwhelmingly for Bernie Sanders. In these recent polls, the secretary was losing among independent voters. And, what the polling shows, and rightly or wrongly, I'm not making a judgment on it, it's just what the polling shows, is that there's, the Secretary Clinton has a very high positives with self-identified Democratic voters. But when you start talking to independent voters, her credibility, her favorables fall off a cliff in large part because she has issues with trustworthiness with this category of voters. That's going to be a very big challenge in the fall because, what you'd like to do is you like to campaign on the issues and what you're planning to do for the country, right, in terms of raising minimum wage or dealing with health care, dealing with jobs. But it's a real challenge for you if you have a trustworthiness gap with voters because you first have to convince them that you're trustworthy before you can really present your plans. And, you're in a relatively short window of time between the convention and the general election. And that is going to present a real challenge for Hillary Clinton if she is the nominee. I mean, that's just from a sort of professional political view. And that's something that Bernie Sanders says. Bernie Sanders has the highest net positives and has had almost entirely through the campaign of any candidate in either the Democratic or Republican side of the ledger.
Jeff, you obviously study politics very closely and have for a number of decades. What's the link there between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders?
Well, look, there are, I've been out with Bernie all across the country. One of the benefits of having worked on this campaign is that you do get to see him all parts of the country, and you get to meet people from all walks of life and all different regions. And there really is a tremendous amount of frustration out in the world. People see the stock market going up, but they don't really see it reflected in their own lives in terms of their wages or the ability to send their kids to college or, to deal with their parents' long-term care. So there's just a deep level of frustration. And this is driven, by what Bernie talks about all the time, which is that most new wealth and income is going to the very people at the very top. And so while you see, overall economic prosperity increasing in the country, it's very concentrated among a very few people. And people are very frustrated by that. That has been a tremendous amount of a base of support for Bernie Sanders, people who want to see that change so that working families and middle-income families get a fair shot. And people are very, very distrustful of establishment of politicians. Now, Donald Trump is obviously also an anti-establishment persona, but he obviously has a very different prescription for how to deal with things. But I think that, there are many people who are just so fed up that they might choose to go with him over Secretary Clinton, even though I would certainly argue, and I don't think it's really even arguable, that she is a far better would be a far better president than Donald Trump. And that goes without saying.
It's going to be fascinating to see how this race unfolds in the next few weeks. Jeff Weaver, campaign manager for Bernie Sanders. Many thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you, Bob. I'm always happy to do it and happy to come back.
Thanks. Coming up next, we'll see how two political observers who've been following this race very closely view the future of the Sanders campaign. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're going to continue with our look at the future of the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders. With me now to discuss the campaign are Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson and Ken Rudin, who is the former political editor at NPR and now the host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Matt and Ken, thanks for being on the program.
Great to be with you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
So let's start off with a question for both of you. Why hasn't former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton been able to wrap up a victory in this campaign? What are the dynamics that have provided so much support for Bernie Sanders? Matt, what's going on?
Well, you touched on it, and I think Jeff Weaver emphasized this. He is an outside candidate running in a climate that is antithetical to support for establishment candidates, and Bernie just happens to be a guy whose message is resonating in this particular time quite well. And that's the major obstacle to Clinton wrapping this up. A distinct portion of the electorate is dissatisfied with the nature of status quo politics, and they want the change candidate.
And Matt, why do you think so many people underestimated the candidacy of Bernie Sanders? What were they missing in terms of the mood of the Democratic voters across the country?
Well, when you look at it on the face of it, Bernie's not your typical politician running for president. I mean, we all know him as our local crank. And for years, he's been spouting off about the billionaire class and so on, but not really much to show for it in the Senate. And when you hear him talk with his Brooklyn accent and you look at his voting record and coming from a small state, he doesn't fit the prototype of a guy who's going to sweep to the nomination. And I think that caught a lot of people by surprise. But of course, the other thing was, who could have anticipated, along with Trump, that this was the year of the outside candidate? Nobody really saw that coming. Everybody expected Hillary Clinton was going to glide to the nomination.
Ken, what do you think? Why is this race still in play?
Well, I agree with almost everything that Matt just said. There are so many questions about Hillary Clinton and the trustworthiness and all that the national polls have shown. The fact that you have the two likely nominees having more unfavorable numbers than favorable numbers has never happened in history. But at the same time, the fact is Bernie Sanders had opportunities that he didn't take advantage of. I mean, it was very interesting to hear Jeff Weaver saying, well, you know, the polls show that we'd be much stronger in November against Donald Trump. Well, that was the Marco Rubio argument for the longest time, and even the John Kasich argument for the longest time. We would be the much stronger candidate against Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders or whomever the Democrats put up. And I don't think that voters really care about that so much as somebody who brings you passion. And there's no question that Bernie Sanders, you know, he's 117 years – look, he's 74 years old. He's been a Congress since 1991. He's not the most popular guy. He's not the guy who tries to pat everybody else on the back. And yet he's the one who's inspiring Democratic voters. He's the one who's getting gigantic crowds around the country, which is just remarkable. And there's almost, you know, it's funny that as Hillary Clinton gets closer to the magic number of 2383, and we'll see how well she does in the next 11 contests, but as she's getting closer, there's not a, you know, Hubert Humphrey used to talk about the politics of joy. I don't see the politics of joy for Hillary Clinton. She's almost like limping across the finish line.
Ken, there was a poll that came out today that shows Hillary Clinton up by 2 points in a national poll against Donald Trump. Do you think that causes some superdelegates to revisit this issue?
Well, you know, yes, of course, that's Bernie Sanders' hope. Obviously, we did see some superdelegates switch over in 2008. Many of them committed earlier to Hillary Clinton. And then as Barack Obama started winning and winning and winning, they realized that he would be a stronger candidate in November. I think part of Bernie's problem is that, look, he didn't become a Democrat until last year. I think a lot of superdelegates have been really not so much in the tank for Hillary Clinton, but they made up their mind, as Jeff Weaver were probably correctly said, made up their mind well before this, you know, before this contest ever happened. And when you have the history angle here, the possibility of the first female president ever elected, you have a candidate who was clearly preferred by the overwhelming number of African Americans who play a very strong part in the party. I think that's why so many of these superdelegates are very loath to switch over. Look, let's be honest here. Jeff Merkley, the senator from Oregon, is the only
senator, the only senator, Democratic senator, who has backed Bernie Sanders, and that says something about his role and his appeal with the establishment of the party.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Matthew in Burlington. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just have a quick question because I keep hearing about this generation gap between Hillary Clinton supporters and Bernie Sanders supporters, where Bernie, with people under the age of 35, has almost won them by 70%. How much do you think this derives from the fact that millennials generally get their information from social media sources, while older voters generally rely on more traditional sources like newspapers and cable news?
That's a great question. Matt Dickinson, what do you think?
Well, I think that's part of it. Certainly, the caller is absolutely right. There's a distinct generational gap in the support for Clinton and Sanders. And again, Ken's earlier jibe about Clinton's age, I mean Sanders' age, really points up the irony here that the oldest candidate is attracting the youngest support. But it's not simply the social media that he's capitalized on. I mean, Clinton's presence is pretty strong, too. It's also the issues. I mean, he is – I talk to my students who are largely in the bag for Bernie, and they say he represents a purity of politics, a principle above pragmatism that they really find appealing. They're just tired of the old status quo politics, and they've had a Clinton to kick around now for – they've never known a president who wasn't named either Clinton or Bush other than Obama. So this is really uncharted territories and very appealing territory.
Today on the program, we're looking at the future of the Bernie Sanders presidential campaign. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Ken Rudin, today on the program, Jeff Weaver said, well, you know, if we get close in elected delegates, that's going to be good enough and should send a pretty clear signal to the superdelegates. But that's also, he said, includes winning California. Let's say that Bernie Sanders wins California, but not by the 65% that he needs to amass a majority of elected delegates. But what would winning California mean to the Sanders campaign?
I hate to use this word, but it would be huge. It absolutely would be. I mean, the fact is that if you take a look at what May has started out with, by Bernie Sanders winning Indiana unexpectedly, then he wins West Virginia, then he's likely to win next week, my opinion, Oregon and perhaps Kentucky. If he wins California, I mean, that is gigantic. It's basically who wants – I mean, here's the argument for the superdelegates. Do you want your nominee limping across the finish line as you want to take on Donald Trump in November? Now, in fairness, if memory serves, Barack Obama did lose, I think, something like six out of the last primaries in 2008 to Hillary Clinton. And that – and matter of fact, and even though that was happening, all the Democrats kept saying, Hillary Clinton, get out of the party. You're hurting the party unity. We got to focus on John McCain and the Republicans. And Hillary Clinton said, I'm not getting out. I think I want to make sure that everybody has their say. And she stayed in until the very last primary in June. The difference, however, is that once those primaries were over, then she did get out of the race. And she did, you know, even though, you know, Obama did have his lead among pledged delegates and she got out of the race. But to hear Jeff Weaver completely say that we are going not so much fighting for June 7th, which is the last day of the primaries, but fighting for the convention, perhaps having fights at the convention in Philadelphia. That was, of course, if you're somebody who wants to focus on Donald Trump, it is maybe a little disturbing. But look, if he keeps winning, what's the argument? How could you make the argument that Hillary Clinton is the strongest candidate? And that's what Bernie Sanders is banking on.
Matt Dickinson, let's just say for the sake of discussion that Bernie Sanders does win California. How do you think that changes the dynamics of this race?
Well, it probably does not change the delegate math all that much because, again, the delegates are allocated once you reach the 15% threshold proportionally. So Bernie's going to close the gap. He's been doing that, picking up a half dozen here, another dozen there. He'll probably still be behind her. But the media narrative will change. Ken's absolutely right. And not just the media narrative, but Bernie's people will be able to put more pressure on the superdelegates to say, listen, you need to reconsider your commitment to this guy. But here's the problem for the superdelegates. I had a research assistant go back and look at the vote totals for both Sanders and Clinton. And it turns out Sanders has not won the Democratic vote, that is the support of self-identified Democrats, in more than two contests, Vermont and New Hampshire. The other 20 contests for which we have exit polls, he's lost to Clinton. Clinton is winning the Democrats every time. So if I'm a superdelegate in the Democratic Party, do I want to give control of my party over to a guy who until a year ago wasn't even a member of my party and who hasn't shown he can draw consistent support within the party? That's a huge task ahead. And I'm not sure the superdelegates, even if Bernie wins California, are willing to go that far.
Well, is the other question, Matt, for those superdelegates? Here's a candidate in Bernie Sanders who is attracting a huge amount of independent support, of youth support, and that's what's needed to have a successful candidate in November?
It is, but again, and Ken's talked about this as well, the independent vote isn't entirely going to be in Sanders' column. I mean, he's attracting a certain type of independent, an independent who tends to be anti-establishment but from a progressive side. They're probably going to vote Democratic no matter what, unless they stay out of the election. There's the other independent, the more moderate, ideologically centrist independent, and actually Donald Trump is doing quite well among that group. So it's not clear to me that Sanders' independents are necessarily the more centrist independents that could swing an election. I think he's drawing much more from progressive independents who are likely to vote Democratic or not at all come November.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ellen in Middlebury. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the program. That's very interesting. I just had one comment, though. Both of your discussants seem to indicate that, oh, you know, Bernie doesn't have much of a record in Congress. And I think that's not accurate. Since he's been in the Senate, he got through the federally qualified health centers, you know, throughout the country. We benefit from those in Vermont. He was the significant, you know, negotiator for the veterans health care legislation, you know, with John McCain on the other side. And when he was in the House, he got more amendments passed to bills than any other member of the House. So, I don't think it's, you know, he's been there for 25 years. I don't think Vermonters would elect him if he was not also a capable legislator. And I think he is, so that's my comment.
All right, Ellen, Ken Rudin, what about that?
Well, I think Ellen makes a good point. Look, I'm not dismissing or for a second what Bernie Sanders has accomplished in his years in the House and the Senate, but it reminds me of Joe Biden in 2008. I mean, by then, I think Joe Biden was first elected to the Senate from Delaware in 1066, and he talked about all these decades of accomplishments and things he got done, and he got 1% of the vote in the Iowa caucuses, and he was gone that day. I kind of think of if the argument is the anti-establishment, if the basically fighting against the establishment and fighting against Washington, then the argument that here's what I accomplished in you know, it's like John Kasich's argument, here's what I did when I was a member of the Budget Committee. I mean, that didn't nobody seemed to care because Washington is a dirty word. So Bernie Sanders, I think, for his part, would rather talk about the appeal he brings to new voters and independent voters and rather talk about a 25-year career in Congress.
Today on the program, we're looking at the future of the Sanders for President campaign. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. We're looking at the future of the campaign of Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders today. With us right now, Ken Rudin, who's the former political editor at NPR and now the host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, and also Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. We got this from Terry, and a lot of people are actually asking this question. Will Bernie turn his campaign into a permanent organization the way that Jesse Jackson tried with the Rainbow Coalition and Howard Dean tried with Democracy for America? How can we use his campaign to help elect more progressive folks to Congress and state and local offices across the country? Matt Dickinson, you know, Bernie Sanders has talked about creating a political revolution in this country. What happens to this movement if he doesn't win the nomination?
Well, that's the inherent tension in his candidacy, right? On one hand, he says we have to defeat Trump in the fall. So obviously there's an incentive not to weaken the party nominee. But on the other hand, he wants to see this movement continue, this revolution, this grassroots revolution. And I think there's a real chance that his supporters are going to argue that he is the future of the party because of the demographics. I mean, he's winning the generational battle. He's got the youth vote. It's also the case that my students who have helped organize, for instance, college students for Bernie, are now talking with other groups, Democratic Socialist groups and progressive groups, to do just that, to begin organizing at the state and local level to institutionalize this grassroots movement in a way that is going to influence politics down the road. I think that's where the future of the Bernie's revolution is directed.
And Ken Rudin, as Terry mentioned in the email, in 2004, Howard Dean, after he dropped out of the race, created Democracy for America to help support candidates throughout the country. Ironically, while Dean is supporting Hillary Clinton this year, Democracy for America is backing Bernie Sanders. So what do you think? Do you think it's likely that Sanders will want to create a grassroots political movement to keep many of his key issues on the table in the future if he doesn't win the nomination?
I mean, that's possible. Obviously, a lot has to do with what the Democratic platform is going to sound like. And as we heard from Jeff Weaver earlier in the show, Bernie Sanders tried to get a lot of his supporters on the platform and rules committee for the convention and was rejected. I think he offered 40 names and got three there. And, of course, you could make the point that while Howard Dean was unsuccessful, he did push for that famous 50-state strategy that while he didn't win the nomination in 2004, that 50-state strategy helped the Democratic Party in 2006 and 2008 with great tremendous gains in Congress. But here's another question. We were talking about what's wrong with Hillary Clinton and why she hasn't wrapped it up. There's a feeling in the Democratic Party that, look, Hillary Clinton, I mean, I don't want to sound like a Bernie Sanders campaign ad here, but the fact is she supported the war in Iraq from the beginning. She was opposed to same-sex marriage at least through 2008. She opposed the she supported the pipeline, the Keystone pipeline, until she no longer supported it. She supported trade deals until she no longer supported that. Bernie Sanders has been steadfast and true to his principles from day one. So the question is, what if Hillary Clinton does win the nomination, and I suspect she will, and then she does what she wants to do, is pivot to sort of like the middle and tries to win over those disaffected Republicans who can't stand Donald Trump, and there are plenty of those as well. Given her inclinations about foreign policy, given her talk about being a more aggressive on foreign policy and talking about no-fly zones and things like that, how do you run a progressive, a separate progressive movement, when you still have those questions about what your presidential nominee will do? So I think a lot has to do not only with what Bernie Sanders supporters will say once the convention is over, but if Hillary Clinton decides to pivot towards the middle, which she's shown indications of wanting to do. If she does that, many of them may just shrug their shoulders and say, we're back to politics as usual, and we'll just stay home.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Helen in Windsor. Hi, Helen. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I would like to say that I am for Hillary. And in my book on negotiation, it says that you have to identify with the candidate. When Hillary answers questions, she's calm and cool, and Bernie just yells and waves his finger. Also, he ran against Madeleine Kuhnen in her second term for governor, and she appeared on a program and said, "Why does he always run against women?" And that's my comment.
Helen, can you stay on the line for a second?
Sure.
So, Helen, when you look at some of these national polls that show that Bernie Sanders is running better than Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump, does that give you any pause?
No.
So you're with Hillary Clinton and really feel she would be the strongest nominee for the Democratic Party?
I do.
Helen, thanks very much for your phone call. Let's turn to Tommy, who is calling from Barrie. Hey, Tommy, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling. I'm another millennial voter. I voted for Barack Obama back in 2008. I was an anti-war protester at the time. And a bunch of my friends thought that, you know, electing Obama was all we had to do to save the world. And I have to say that we really wanted change then, and Barack Obama compromised on the one thing that we didn't want to see compromise on, and that was peace. You know, my generation is very against the drone program, very against the surveillance state. I remember the passage of the Patriot Act when I was in middle school, and I have to say that I'm not fed up with the Washington establishment so much as I'm fed up with the Democratic Party. And I think what's happening now is we're seeing the collapse of both the Republican and Democratic Party, and hopefully the two-party system, because what I really think is the problem is that we're being told that this is between two private, unelected organizations, which is the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee, when really more than a third of the country's population now is independent, and a vast majority of millennials are independent. And as I said earlier, I think we're just fed up with the parties themselves.
So, Tommy, what do you do in the November election if the Republican candidate is Donald Trump and the Democratic candidate is Hillary Clinton?
Cry a lot, honestly. I don't know what I'll do, and I'm very conflicted about that. I hope he runs a third-party nomination. I have to say that if Trump is elected, I think we have a much better chance of seeing the entire establishment collapse because he would be such a bad president. And I think that seeing the total failure of Washington would allow us to start over, and that Hillary Clinton is going to give us just enough not to complain and keep walking down this road of you can't have what you need, you can only have what we're willing to give you. And I don't think that's acceptable. I think we need the change that we've been promised since 2008.
Okay, Tommy, many thanks for your phone call. Mac Dickinson, you know, there are a certain number of Democrats who feel like this prolonged primary is really hurting Hillary Clinton. Financial resources, she's got to compete now in California if it's a very expensive media market. What do you think? Has this prolonged campaign made her a better candidate? Some people think that's true, or has it actually hurt her?
Well, the research on this is not very compelling because we just haven't had many examples of contested races that went to the convention. So everybody's always pointing to 2008 as maybe the best example. And in 2008, Hillary, as Ken pointed out, contested until the convention. It didn't seem to hurt Barack Obama in the general election. But the difference is that Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton ideologically were really very close to each other. So it wasn't a choice about the soul of the Democratic Party. They were both Democrats. This isn't the case now. And the recent caller, eloquently points up what many millennials feel, which is tremendous dissatisfaction with the Democratic Party. So in this sense, I think Sanders' challenge is a bit more worrisome from Clinton's perspective, not just the resources to voting, but magnifying the fracture within the Democratic Party between the millennials, the white young voters, and the more traditional established Democratic coalition, African Americans, older voters, and women. So if I'm Hillary Clinton, yeah, I understand to give everyone their voice, but secretly I'm thinking to myself, boy, this is not helping me in the general election. And I hope Bernie is really serious at some point of recognizing we've got to unite to defeat Trump.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from August in Middlesex. Hi, August. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is August calling, and I am a Hillary supporter. I just would like to point out that compromise and working towards the middle and changing positions in order to be inclusive is not a bad thing in a politician, and neither wing of the party can really represent the rest of the country. And when you know, either Bernie supporters or Trump supporters say it's all our way or no way, that means that you're leaving off the majority of the people. And that's just not a good way to run a democracy.
August, thanks very much for your phone call. Ken Rudin, what are you know, the Bernie campaign makes certain issues kind of black and white issues. Does August have a point?
she absolutely has a point. I mean, if you think of the people who've been elected president, and whatever you think of Richard Nixon, I mean, and Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, the reasons that for much of their presidencies, I mean, of course, they were not all successful presidents, but the successes they attained was because they worked with across the aisle. They worked with the other side. The problem, of course, is that, I mean, as I mentioned earlier, Hillary Clinton, with her, I mean, her inclination is, yes, to move to the middle, to compromise, but at the same time, she has Bernie Sanders yapping at her left, and so she's afraid to go. Whereas Donald Trump has so many views on so many positions that there is no ideological. So in other words, he can have a platform. It doesn't matter how it's written, because I'm sure in one way or another, it'll reflect what Donald Trump wants. Ultimately, we're talking about, you know, how the purists on the left and the right want to move the party their way. But in a sense, I think August does have the winning argument that to win in November, to unite the country, you have to hear from both sides, and you know, I have to say this, but neither Donald Trump nor Bernie Sanders has made that case so far.
Well, this has been a great discussion about the future of the Sanders campaign. Many thanks to our guest today, former NPR political editor Ken Rudin, who is now the host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast, and Middlebury College political science professor Matt Dickinson. Thank you both very much for being on the program today.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you,
great
Bob.
Great calls from the callers.
Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sangari and Sam Gale Rosen. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.